7. The Lesson on the Family. After the busy period of teaching and personal work of Passover week in Jerusalem, Jesus spent the next Wednesday at Bethany with his apostles resting. That afternoon, Thomas asked a question which elicited a long and instructive answer. Said Thomas, "Master, on the day we were set apart as ambassadors of the kingdom, you told us many things, instructed us regarding our personal mode of life, but what shall we teach the multitude? How are these people to live after the kingdom more fully comes? Shall your disciples own slaves? Shall your believers court poverty and shun property? Shall mercy alone prevail so that we shall have no more law and justice?" Jesus and the 12 spent all afternoon and all that evening after supper discussing Thomas's questions. For the purposes of this record, we present the following summary of the Master's instruction. Jesus sought first to make plain to his apostles that he himself was on earth living a unique life in the flesh, and that they, the 12, had been called to participate in this bestowal experience of the Son of Man. And as such co-workers, they, too, must share in many of the special restrictions and obligations of the entire bestowal experience. There was a veiled intimation that the Son of Man was the only person who had ever lived on earth who could simultaneously see into the very heart of God and into the very depths of man's soul. Very plainly, Jesus explained that the kingdom of heaven was an evolutionary experience, beginning here on earth and progressing up through successive life stations to paradise. In the course of the evening, he definitely stated that at some future stage of kingdom development, he would revisit this world in spiritual power and divine glory. He next explained that the kingdom idea was not the best way to illustrate man's relation to God, that he employed such figures of speech because the Jewish people were expecting the kingdom, and because John had preached in terms of the coming kingdom. Jesus said, "The people of another age will better understand the gospel of the kingdom when it is presented in terms expressive of the family relationship, when man understands religion as the teaching of the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man, sonship with God." Then the Master discoursed at some length on the earthly family as an illustration of the heavenly family, restating the two fundamental laws of living, the first commandment of love for the father, the head of the family, and the second commandment of mutual love among the children, to love your brother as yourself. And then he explained that such a quality of brotherly affection would invariably manifest itself in unselfish and loving social service. Following that came the memorable discussion of the fundamental characteristics of family life and their application to the relationship existing between God and man. Jesus stated that a true family is founded on the following 7 facts. 1. The fact of existence. The relationships of nature and the phenomena of mortal likenesses are bound up in the family. Children inherit certain parental traits. The children take origin in the parents. Personality existence depends on the act of the parent. The relationship of father and child is inherent in all nature and pervades all living existences. 2. Security and pleasure. True fathers take great pleasure in providing for the needs of their children. Many fathers are not content with supplying the mere wants of their children, but enjoy making provision for their pleasures also. 3. Education and training. Wise fathers carefully plan for the education and adequate training of their sons and daughters. When young, they are prepared for the greater responsibilities of later life. 4. Discipline and restraint. Far-seeing fathers also make provision for the necessary discipline, guidance, correction, and sometimes restraint of their young and immature offspring. 5. Companionship and loyalty. The affectionate father holds intimate and loving intercourse with his children. Always is his ear open to their petitions, he is ever ready to share their hardships and assist them over their difficulties. The father is supremely interested in the progressive welfare of his progeny. 6. Love and mercy. A compassionate father is freely forgiving. Fathers do not hold vengeful memories against their children. Fathers are not like judges, enemies, or creditors. Real families are built upon tolerance, patience, and forgiveness. 7. Provision for the future. Temporal fathers like to leave an inheritance for their sons. The family continues from one generation to another. Death only ends one generation to mark the beginning of another. death terminates an individual life, but not necessarily the family. For hours, the Master discussed the application of these features of family life to the relations of man, the earth child, to God, the Paradise Father. And this was his conclusion. The entire relationship of a son to the Father I know in perfection, for all that you must attain of sonship in the eternal future, I have now already attained. The Son of Man is prepared to ascend to the right hand of the Father, so that in me is the way now open still wider for all of you to see God, and, ere you have finished the glorious progression, to become perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. When the apostles heard these startling words, they recalled the pronouncements which John made at the time of Jesus' baptism, and they also vividly recalled this experience in connection with their preaching and teaching subsequent to the Master's death and resurrection. Jesus is a divine Son, one in the universal Father's full confidence. He had been with the Father and comprehended him fully. He had now lived his earth life to the full satisfaction of the Father, and this incarnation in the flesh had enabled him fully to comprehend man. Jesus was the perfection of man. He had attained just such perfection as all true believers are destined to attain in him and through him. Jesus revealed a God of perfection to man and presented in himself the perfected Son of the realms to God. Although Jesus discoursed for several hours, Thomas was not yet satisfied, for he said, "But Master, we do not find that the Father in heaven always deals kindly and mercifully with us. Many times we grievously suffer on earth, and not always are our prayers answered. Where do we fail to grasp the meaning of your teaching?" Jesus replied, "Thomas, Thomas, how long before you will acquire the ability to listen with the ear of the Spirit? How long will it be before you discern that this kingdom is a spiritual kingdom, and that my Father is also a spiritual being? Do you not understand that I am teaching you as spiritual children in the spirit family of heaven, of which the Fatherhead is an infinite and eternal spirit? Will you not allow me to use the earth family as an illustration of divine relationships, without so literally applying my teaching to material affairs? In your minds, cannot you separate the spiritual realities of the kingdom from the material, social, economic, and political problems of the age? When I speak the language of the Spirit, why do you insist on translating my meaning into the language of the flesh, just because I presume to employ commonplace and literal relationships for purposes of illustration? My children, I implore that you cease to apply the teaching of the kingdom of the Spirit to the sordid affairs of slavery, poverty, houses, and lands, and to the material problems of human equity and justice. These temporal matters are the concern of men of this world, and while in a way they affect all men, you have been called to represent me in the world, even as I represent my Father. You are spiritual ambassadors of a spiritual kingdom, special representatives of the Spirit Father. By this time it should be possible for me to instruct you as full-grown men of the Spirit Kingdom. Must I ever address you only as children? Will you never grow up in spirit perception? Nevertheless, I love you and will bear with you, even to the very end of our association in the flesh. And even then shall my Spirit go before you into all the world."